Following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
Welcome to a Friday, everyone. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com and the magic of tape delay on the Progressive Voices Network and Netroots Radio and FYI Nation and other a lot of other places. But, however you listen, I'm glad you're here. Apparently, I pissed a few people off yesterday, so I need to clarify something. If the election comes down to two people, as it looks like it's going to, let's put Justin Amash to the side, because, no third-party candidate has ever won a presidential election. I do think he's getting in it and he's going to be a spoiler, but that's a topic for another day. We're not talking about Justin Amash today. Basically, the election is between two flawed, very flawed human beings. Donald Trump, on the one hand, an authoritarian wannabe, a dictator wannabe, a dear leader wannabe, plus a sexual predator. I have no doubt in my mind who Donald Trump is. And we know it because there are more than 20 credible allegations on the books. Now, his new mouthpiece, McEnany, just held her first press briefing in the White House briefing room. And, what she tried to say when asked about it is that, you're bringing up charges from 4 years ago and they were all answered because Donald Trump denied it all forcefully. Yeah, point being. And it was litigated because you voted for Trump. Bullshit. More Americans voted against Donald Trump than voted for her, and more didn't vote at all. Or for him, and more didn't vote at all. So that's a flawed argument. It's the ridiculousness of our electoral college that handed Donald Trump the White House. That needs to be fixed. It should have been fixed a long time ago. We need to fix it now. But Donald Trump, I have no doubt whatsoever, is a rapist. He is a sexual predator. He's got upwards of 24 legitimate, credible complaints against him, and none of them have had their day in court. So what's your name, McEnany? When we have a day in court, we can talk about it being litigated. Until then, he just hasn't dealt with the charges. What he does is just dismiss them out of hand. And that's what Joe Biden did this morning. Am I satisfied? No. But then again, let me back up and say, if the contest comes between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Yes, I will vote against Donald Trump. I will vote for the Democratic nominee, even if it's someone who makes me very uncomfortable. And Joe Biden makes me very uncomfortable for a number of reasons. Do I believe these allegations? Yeah, because it's not the first one. There are others out there. But my bigger problem, believe it or not, is not with Joe Biden. It's with the hypocrites in the Democratic Party who say, believe all women unless they're accusing a Democrat. Unless they're accusing someone who, we want to run for president. If that's the case, we'll make up shit. We'll say, the LA Times conducted a thorough investigation and cleared him. That's not true, Stacey Abrams. It's just not true. But if it's a choice between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, to quote Jeff Charlotte, I'll take the rapist who's not actively trying to kill us. So, I'm not trying to do Donald Trump's bidding. Donald Trump must be removed from office, full stop, end of sentence, period, exclamation point. And I've said it over and over again, I would elect my dog Jackson over Donald Trump, and he'd do a better job. Thankfully, Jackson's not running because I don't, you know, I don't want to give him up. My time with my Jackson is way too precious. But it doesn't mean that I excuse Joe Biden. And I'm sorry, his answers today were not good enough. Just not good enough. I know, I feel like I need to open the show with a song, with a parody song. But you know what? We're going to skip it today because this is too important. And we do have a guest coming up that we're going to get to about a great new movie that's opening tonight nationally, virtually. It's a virtual film festival. And it's a great movie about our real immigration problems. And this doesn't have anything to do with Donald Trump because the story they tell is before, it's from before Donald Trump took office. It happened during the Obama administration. It's a movie called The Infiltrators, and we're going to speak with the director a little later this hour. But right now, I want to talk to you. I had one long-term listener, subscriber, somebody who has done a monthly donation, a $5 donation every month for a few years, and she sent me a note yesterday after the show and said, sorry. No hate here, but I'm stopping my contribution. Why? Because I won't blindly say, okay, he's a Democrat, so I'll believe him? What happened to the Me Too movement? What happened to everyone saying, trust women, listen to women, don't just discount them? And I'll tell you something. I get that Tara Reid doesn't have the educational or professional background that Christine Blasey Ford has. Does that mean she's less than? Does that mean that nothing she says is credible? Look, I read the accounts. I know that at least two or three people that she told, allegedly told about this incident back in 1993, 94, 95, have backed up her story. I know that the people who've said, I don't recall that, all worked for Joe Biden. You know, we may never know the answer. Put them both in a room and have them both, you know, submit to a polygraph exam. Great, they won't hold up in court, but I'll take the results. I'll look at them anyway, because information is what we want. And my problem with Biden this morning is that I thought Mika Brzezinski actually did a very good job of interviewing him. So it started with his complete and utter unequivocal denial.
It is not true. I'm saying unequivocally, it never, never happened. And it didn't. It never happened.
Yeah.
Do you remember her? Do you remember any types of complaints that she might have made?
I don't remember any type of complaint she may have made. It was 27 years ago, and I don't remember, nor does anyone else that I'm aware of. And the fact is that I don't remember.
Okay, he doesn't remember. It was 27 years ago. I got it. And then, well, and no, I don't usually watch Morning Joe these days. I watched today because I knew that Joe Biden was going to be on. You know what? I'm going to play you the longer version of the next session, because this is what really it made me concerned this morning. I was hoping he would come across as credible and transparent and all the cards on the table, but that's not what happened. If you recall, one of the things that people are asking about is whether or not, you know, all the volumes of his Senate papers had been turned over to the University of Delaware. Right. They'll get into that in the section I'm about to play for you. The question was, why not have Tara Reid says she did file a complaint of sorts. She didn't detail the allegations that she's telling now, but she did say there was a sexual abuse, there was sexual harassment, and that she did file a complaint, but she doesn't have the paperwork. So we're saying, all right, then let us, somebody, search through those archives at the University of Delaware. Today, Joe Biden said, well, You know, there's no personnel stuff in there. That's just my personal papers and my policy papers. And there's stuff there that could be taken out of context. And I don't want everyone digging through that. And it's slated to be released after he's out of public life. But he said if there were anything in the personnel file, that would be in the National Archives. But when Mika Brzezinski pressed him on the question, he just got more and more, I don't know the word, cagey about it. Here's the back and forth. And yes, I may pause it at times. It's a 4-minute clip. And I'll probably have a few things to say in the middle, so I'll pause it if it's necessary. But here we go.
Are you absolutely certain? Are you absolutely positive there is no record of any complaint by Tara Reid against you?
I am absolutely positive that no one that I'm aware of ever has been made aware of any complaint, a formal complaint made by or a complaint by Tara Reid against.
No one that I'm aware of has ever been made aware of any complaint. What? I'm sorry. I need to back that up again.
It's me.
What is he saying?
Made aware of any complaint, a formal complaint made by or a complaint by Tara Reid against me at the time this allegedly happened 27 years ago or until I announced for press. Well, it was in April or May of this year.
Oh, my God. Can you transcribe that for me? Because a simple yes or no would have sufficed. But I digress. Keep going, Joe. Oh, I guess I got to push this button.
I know of no one who's aware that any complaint was made.
Okay.
I've got two more questions. The first.
Okay, please.
Go ahead. The first is about your University of Delaware records.
Yep, this is what I was talking
about. Do you agree with the reporting that those records were supposed to be revealed to the public and then they were resealed for a longer period of time until after you leave, quote, public life? And if you agree with that, if that's what happened, why did that happen?
Because, look. The fact is that there's a lot of things that of speeches I've made, positions I've taken, interviews that I did overseas with people, all of those things relating to my job. And the idea that they would all be made public in the fact while I was running for public office, they could be really taken out of context. Their papers are position papers.
They are
documents that existed. And that when I, for example, when I met with Putin or when I met with whoever.
Yeah.
And
whomever.
All of that to be fodder in a campaign.
Okay, you're running for president. Don't you think we should know what you said in interviews with foreign press or in meetings with Putin or whoever? Really, Joe Biden, I'm sorry, but you're making things worse here. You're telling us there are things in your public papers that will be released at the University of Delaware once you're done with public life that we shouldn't be able to see now because you're running for president and we may find out something about you that we shouldn't know? Or something's going to be taken out of context? Really? I'm sorry. I have a problem with that. I don't care if it's Joe Biden saying it, Donald Trump, or the man on the fucking moon. You should be an open book. You're running for president. You mean you said something to Vladimir Putin you don't want us to know about? It's not okay.
At this time, I don't know of anybody who's done anything like that. And so the National Archives is the only place there would be anything having to do with personnel records.
Yeah.
There are no personnel records in the Biden papers at the university.
So personnel records aside, are you certain there was nothing about Tara Reid in those records? And if so,
I am absolutely certain.
Why not approve a search of her?
What's the point you're trying to make?
The point
there
I'm trying
no
to make is that you
by
are,
definition.
Listen to how angry he's getting.
The point I'm trying to make is that you are approving and actually calling for a search of the National Archives records of anything pertaining to Tara Reid. I'm asking why not do the same in the University of Delaware records, which have raised questions because they were supposed to be revealed to the public and then they were sealed for a longer period of time. Why not do it for both sets of records?
Yes. Good question.
Because the material in The University of Delaware has no personnel files, and it has, but it does have a lot of confidential conversations that I had with the president about a particular issue that I had with the heads of state of other places, that would not be something that would be revealed while I was in public office or while I was seeking public office. It just stands to reason. The best of my knowledge, no one else has done that either.
Wow.
I'm just talking about her name, not anybody else in those records. A search for
that. Listen to this. One, two, three. Silence.
Nothing classified with the president or anybody else. I'm just asking, why not do a search for Tara Reid's name in the University of Delaware records?
Look, I mean, who does that search?
Historians from the University of Delaware.
The University of Delaware.
Hello.
Perhaps you set up a commission that can do it. I don't know. Whatever is the fairest way to create the most transparency.
Well, this is transparency.
Look, Mika, she said she filed a report. She has her employment records still. She said she refiled a report with the only office that would have a report in the United States Senate at the time. If the report was ever filed, it was filed there, period.
So what's the harm in doing a search of her name and her name alone in those University of Delaware archives? You can have university officials, historians, you name the people from the University of Delaware who can do the search. They're not looking for your classified conversations or what you may or may not have said to Vladimir Putin. They just want to know, is Tara Reid's name in any of those 17,000 boxes of documents? And the fact that he's not being transparent there, the fact that he's saying, no, there's stuff in there that I don't want you to see, is troubling to me. Now, that doesn't negate the fact that Donald Trump is a fucking murderous, idiotic megalomaniac who is dead set on destroying the planet. He's already destroyed this country. He's already hurt this country immeasurably. I do blame him for the number of the magnitude of the COVID infection and spread here in the United States. I can trace it directly back to mistakes he and his administration made when that first cruise ship was allowed. They sent officials onto the ship to meet with the people without any protective gear, and then they let them loose around the country. That began the spread of COVID-19 in the U.S., and that's why we've had over a million cases. With 4% of the world's population, we have 30%, 33% of the world's infections, and about a quarter of the deaths. So, you know, there's no putting the two, there's no comparison between the two. Joe Biden is a flawed man, an even more flawed candidate, but between him and Donald Trump, there's no question. The fact that Donald Trump is the president of the United States is a travesty. It is a stain on the history of the United States of America. It says we are not the most educated country in the world, because if we were, that moron would not be the president. And as I read to you from that opinion piece in the Irish Times just the other day, the United States has lost its place as a world leader. Now we are the pity of the world. They look down on us and say, oh, what a shame. What happened to that once great nation? Now, I'll argue with you all day and all night about how great we ever were, because our history is not so great. I'm not part of the, you know, American exceptionalism crowd. I think this country is pretty fucked up. And a perfect example of that comes from a graphic I found on Twitter. I didn't pull it because I wasn't thinking about about this. But let me see if I can't find it, because I know I liked this tweet. And it was something along the lines of, you know, how many people have lost, here it is, workers who've lost health insurance during the pandemic. And it goes UK, zero, Turkey, zero, Sweden, zero, Spain, zero, South Korea, Portugal, Norway, New Zealand, Japan, Italy, Israel, Iceland, Hungary. They're in alphabetical order, obviously. Greece, Germany, France, or almost backwards alphabetical order. Finland, Denmark, Chile, Canada, Belgium, Australia, all with big fat zeros. United States, 9,200,000 plus. I do not think America is the greatest country in the world. I've never felt that way since I was old enough to understand how we treat our people, how if you're very, very wealthy, you get all the advantages. If you're white and very, very wealthy, you get all the advantages. If you're not so lucky, you get shit upon. And that's most of us. Now, I'm white. I got that going for me. But I'm certainly far from very, very wealthy. And it is hard to get by in this country. And things are only going to get worse. Now, the rest of the world, they're being taken care of by their governments. And oh, my God, it's something called socialism. All those countries are sending money to their citizens who are hurting because they don't have an income because they're all sheltering at home trying to flatten the curve of the COVID-19 coronavirus. Every other country, from Canada to Denmark to Germany to Israel to New Zealand, have given their people money. And we got, I got $1,200 deposited into my account last week. Lucky me. $1,200 does not pay 1 month's rent. And Steve Mnuchin, Mr. Treasury Secretary, who wouldn't know, what it's like to have to pay rent, to have to, you know, to see what's going to run out first, days in the month or the money you have left to pay the bills. He says, $1,200. Yeah, that'll last 10 weeks. On what planet? So, yeah, this is a lot I'm giving you. I had someone cancel their, I'm surprised it was only one, to be frank, an ongoing monthly contribution to the show, because I dared to say Joe Biden should be held to the same standard as Brett Kavanaugh and Donald Trump. If he did something untoward, don't you want to know about it? Or you'd rather just tell me. Maybe you'd rather just pull down the blinders and say, you know what? It is what it is. The president is a sexual predator who has assaulted, probably, if we believe them, over 20 women. Those are just the ones who've come forward so far. I'll take Joe Biden over him because he's the lesser of two evils. And you know what? I've said that. I've made my deal with the devil. I live in Florida. My vote is important. I will vote against Donald Trump. You know, but would I love it if Joe Biden said, you know what? I'm just the wrong person at the wrong time right now. I need to step down and we need to come to a consensus on a candidate who can take us through. And one thing that Jeff Charlotte had another brilliant piece on Facebook along these same lines. I'll post it. I'll post a link to it from the blog today at NicoleSandler.com. He said, I'll take any of that field of candidates who were in it at the beginning, except for Mike Bloomberg, and they can replace him. And I'll take it a step further. You know what? Forget about all of them, because none of them won. Including Bernie Sanders. This is not about Bernie Sanders. How about Sherrod Brown? Sherrod Brown is the perfect candidate. Just saying, he can be replaced at the last minute. And, he can still pick Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren as his running mate. Just my thoughts. I really thought somebody, one of you guys, would want to weigh in. 954-889-6410 is the number. I guess you don't. So that's my stance. Do I like it? No. I wish Joe Biden wasn't the presumptive nominee. And here's the thing to the people who have written to me and said, well, what do you want to do? You want the DNC to pull his nomination? No, because he doesn't have the nomination yet. It is May 1st. The convention, if it is to happen, won't happen till the end of August, maybe a virtual convention. Joe Biden is not the nominee yet. He doesn't have the requisite number of delegates to clinch the nomination. And we're still in primary season, yet who knows who's voting and where and how? Because the last time people voted in person in Wisconsin, so far it's something like 80-some-odd people who went to the polls have come down with the virus. So we need to vote by mail. But the fact of the matter is, nothing is set in stone for the 2020 election yet. And if Joe Biden doesn't want to open those archives, then I have to ask what he's hiding. Again, I reiterate, yes, if the election were today, I'd vote for Joe Biden over Donald Trump, and I wouldn't give it a second. Well, I would give it a second thought, but I'd do it for the greater good, knowing that Joe Biden is not going to last very long, that he will, and he even said this, he'll be a transitional president. But, anyway, that's where I am. And I'm sorry if it makes you not want to listen to my show anymore, it makes you want to cancel your contribution to me, then I ask you to examine yourself and say, why is it okay for a Democrat to be accused of doing horrible things and we don't listen to the women who are making the accusations? But if they accuse a Republican, well, then game on. I'm just asking about the hypocrisy. All right. I told you I have an interview to share with you. And, it's going to be hard to make a segue. So I'll tell you what, let's do something funny. All right. We haven't heard from Lauren Mayer in a while. So how about we do a little bit of a palate cleanser? Oh, now someone's calling in. All right. I'm probably going to regret this. But hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Pam.
Hi, Pam. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the blue state of California.
Okay, Pam from California. Hi, Pam. So what do you think?
Well, first of all, I want to say I appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I'm not in a position to send anything to you at the moment, but as soon as I can, I will.
Well, thank you, and I know how it is.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I've even sent you an email. The only thing I disagree with is I would not vote for him. I will not compromise myself, but I wouldn't place my views on anyone else.
Right, and you're also in California.
And when you say you will use your industrial,
I've got them right here. They're right here. I'll put them on my nose right now when I talk about him. And if I still lived in California, chances are I wouldn't vote for him either. But I live in Florida, so I don't have that luxury. I will vote for Joe Biden.
Florida, and I agree with you.
Yep.
And so, for those out there who choose not to support you, that's on them. It shows that they lack integrity, because if they had integrity, they would not try to sweep this under the rug.
I agree.
So you keep doing what you're doing, and you hold strong to your integrity, and don't be influenced by any idiots.
Thank you so much, Pam.
Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you for calling.
Waiting in line.
I really appreciate it. Thank you. Oh, okay. Now everyone wants to get in. All right. Let's try this from the 760 area code. Hi, who's this? No, 612 area code. Who's this?
Roger in Minneapolis.
Roger in Minneapolis. Hey, Roger. Well, you're in Minneapolis. Okay. Look what was done to Al Franken. Is that okay?
No, I unfortunately, in my effort to dial in, don't know if there was further commentary immediately prior to you taking my call. Are you referring to something that you addressed in a previous caller or
No. I'm just talking about, look, the Democrats back when they were talking about Al Franken had very high standards and they didn't give him a fair hearing. There was no investigation. They just wanted his head. Now, all of a sudden, they're saying, there's no there. I know Joe Biden. He's fine. Really? Are we that hypocritical?
Well, Nicole, I'm calling in because I agree with you that Biden and his ability to communicate clearly and be straightforward in his style of communication is often fairly obviously impaired. And I was extremely unhappy when he decided to throw his hat in the ring. I thought it would damage Bernie's prospects yep. to some extent. And I think that Bernie and Elizabeth missed the boat by not declaring each other running mate
and I agree.
Binding together the left at that point yep. to shove back on Biden and unite the party behind them.
Yep.
That being said, though, I do feel that it's terribly important to get rid of Trump.
Yeah, so do I.
And what I am concerned about right now is I hear the energy with which you are approaching this matter with Biden. And I'm sorry, but it is reminiscent to me of the kind of energy that was directed against Franken. I know that you're suggesting that there should be a proper investigation, mm-hmm. and I don't disagree with that. But I don't think that our needs are served right now by making very much out of Ms. Reed's claims. And part of the reason for that is because of what is a discernibly chameleon-like story coming from her. I've been aware of her complaints against Biden for some time mm-hmm. now, and I've looked into it. And I think it would be fine if we could, in an airtight manner, see Biden get taken down because of legitimate complaint against him, and have a different candidate become inserted. I wouldn't be opposed to seeing that happen. But what happened to Al Franken was an appalling
horrible
injustice.
Horrible. And Al Franken, you know what? And had they conducted a thorough investigation, perhaps in the Senate Ethics Committee, then maybe this would not have happened. He wouldn't have been pushed out. But they all pushed him out. And this is what I see as the utter hypocrisy of the Democrats, is the way they jumped all over Al Franken. But now they're all jumping to the defense of Joe Biden. Where's the investigation?
Well, I have to say that I think that I see people riding kind of both sides of the fence when it comes to the matter of supporting the rights of a person making accusations of this kind. I see people jumping the fence on both sides. I remember conversations between you and Laffy,
yeah.
and I think if we dug it up, where there was a lot of indignation towards Franken. And
not
if
from
I remember
me.
Correctly,
oh, no,
Laffy
no, no, no.
favored seeing him be deposed. And I was very appalled when Heather Parton Digby felt quite firmly that Franken had to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the time is right for this kind of energy towards Biden.
I get exactly what you're saying. The timing sucks on it. Do I wish she hadn't come forward? Frankly, yes. I wish she would have done this years ago. If these allegations are true, where was she when he was running for vice president, when he was Barack Obama's running mate? Where was she all those years ago? Why now, when we need to take down the most dangerous president in American history, bar none? I agree. Her timing
Nicole,
sucks. But
I will bet my bottom dollar that this is an orchestrated takedown, and it's being funded in the background by some people from the right wing. I am almost certain of it. I've watched the pattern of the way that her story has shifted, and I think that we should dismiss with prejudice the noise coming from her at this point. I just really think that that is the correct thing to do. And I would
how do you, but how do you square that?
You.
How do you square that with all the women who are survivors of sexual assault, who made so much progress in the last couple of years with Me Too, and to now all of a sudden, you know what? Women are not to be believed. You know what? She's kind of skanky, I think. She's certainly not as credible as Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. You can't believe her. That's dangerous to me. I really think we made all this progress. Women are to be believed or to be listened to. They're doing neither when it comes to Tara Reid.
Well, I think that part of that is, well, that's actually debatable. You really, I beg you to study the pattern of the claims and the incremental nature of the increasing of the style of her claims. I'm sorry, but her credibility is very thin to me. And I think that the Me Too movement made a huge mistake in seeing Franken be taken down.
I agree.
It caused a weakening of support among committed feminists like myself when it comes to taking these kinds of things as far as possible at face value.
I hear you. And I do think
that this is, I actually, the clip you played of Biden talking about this illustrates perfectly why he shouldn't be our candidate.
Yes.
Okay.
Because he's not there.
Using this as the pretense for taking him down is a mistake.
Okay. All right. You know what? I'm going to move on just because we've got people calling in. Your point was made. I get you. All right. I just answered this call from the 760 number who'd been so persistent. He kept calling in and then he dropped off, or she. I don't even know who it was. All right. 760. Okay. All right. 760 is back. Hi. Who's this?
Yes. Hi. This is Jessica from California.
Hey, Jessica. So what's your thoughts on this?
My thoughts on this, I'm speaking to Nicole. Nicole,
yes.
I absolutely agree with you. It is hypocritical not to take Tara Reid's word for it. And definitely we do need an investigation. And I'm with you in terms of voting. You know, I mean, it's such a hard thing. And yes, as you said, this is such bad timing. But
horrible.
Yes, we do have to get the most dangerous president out of office.
I
mean, it's like we have to take everything a step at a time. And in terms of hypocrisy, maybe I'm pie in the sky here, but I would like to think that if there is an investigation into Tara Reid's claims, and there should be, that maybe we can then reopen the claims, the substantial claims that were made against President Trump.
Please.
I mean,
absolutely.
Coming forward, I'm sorry.
Right, because they haven't been. And I don't know if you heard that dog and pony show masquerading as the first White House press briefing in a year with what's her name, with McEnany. But let me just play for you. This is less than a minute long clip. This is what she said about this question that was asked today. Here's that clip.
So the president has in the past denied any of the allegations from the many women who have accused him of sexual misconduct. But for that podcast today, you seem to suggest the allegations that Tara Reid has raised are more, what do you say, credible than the ones against Brett Kavanaugh. What about the allegations that were raised against him, however? Why should the public, or what makes them any less credible than the allegations from Tara Reid?
The president has swiftly denied all of these allegations that were
raised
four years ago. He has always told the truth on these issues. He's denied them immediately. And you're bringing up issues, like I said, from 4 years ago.
Denying them immediately and telling the truth are, you know, two different things. But yeah, just small minor point there. But do go on.
That were asked and answered, and the American people had their say in the matter when they elected President Trump as president of the United States. But
all right, that's enough of that. So you get the idea. Yeah, it's more gaslights. It's just, it's nonsense.
Yes, I agree. Like you said, bad timing, Bad timing, but yes, when push comes to shove, and I am in California, I'm going to vote for Biden. I'm going to vote for the guy. I feel like we got to take baby steps at a time. Do we want another 4 years of Trump?
Hell no.
And I feel like we're guaranteed another 4 years of Trump or something as horrible as Trump. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Thank you so much for the call. All right, we'll do one more from 718. You calling from Brooklyn?
No, I'm actually calling from Manhattan.
Ah, okay. Hi, who's
Nicole.
This?
Hi. Hi. I had to call. First, on the issue that you were raising about Biden getting mad at Mika, I don't think he was actually getting mad at her. I think he was getting frustrated because she kept mentioning, can't someone search? And I think what he should have said was, these are not electronic documents. These are physical paper, so someone would have to physically read every sheet of paper. And he did mention something about it getting out. So anything personal or, like he said about the conversations that he had with world leaders, right, it could be taken out of context. And he wasn't sure who would be searching through it. So that's what he should have said.
Right.
That these are not, this is not electronic. These
right,
are,
I gotcha. And
paper.
So, and
so that's
what
why he was like, "What is she talking about?"
But what Mika said is, they can search just for Tara Reid's name. They're not looking for anything else. They won't want anything else.
To do that, you can do that electronically. Type in her name, but in order to find it in a paper stack. Of, I think it was like eight. I don't know. It's a crazy.
It's like 1,800 boxes, but they have been. They've been archiving. They've been going through this stuff for a couple of years now. So I'm sure they're pretty far into it. And who's ever been archiving those papers, those boxes, those files? They're the ones to do it. They're already going through it. What you like? Look at it, but don't look at it.
Trying to make.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
But what I really called for is. I don't know if Ms. Reed is telling the truth or not, but she does have a credibility issue. I don't know if somebody raised this already, but did you read Michael Stearns? He's an ex-prosecutor, and he wrote an article
in USA Today. And I will again say it was an opinion piece. Michael Stern wrote
an opinion
piece.
But there were facts in there.
Yeah.
Her story did evolve. She did lie about how she left his employ. You know, she did express these weird things about Putin. She did say in text messages, I guess she posted this. She was liking things that about Joe Biden that had to do with the Violence Against Women's Act. If someone sexually assaulted you, would you be praising them and retweeting the things they're saying and saying, she said, listen to him. He speaks the truth. I'm having problems reconciling those two things.
Okay. Well, it that should be all part of an investigation.
Sense.
To just dismiss her out of hand because you don't like what she's saying is
I'm
the problem.
I'm not dismissing.
Gotcha.
Not dismissing at all.
Okay.
But I just have a problem with that. I just feel like those two things are not gelling. And she's going to speak, I believe, on Sunday. And I'm going to watch.
Yes.
But,
watch
with an
too.
Open heart and open mind. But
absolutely.
I just feel like at this point, we're stuck, okay? Because it's either Joe Biden,
but it isn't.
Or it is Donald Trump.
But it
because
isn't.
I like Sherrod Brown,
but
I would
isn't.
Have voted for him in a heartbeat. I was a Elizabeth Warren person, but I think that if we substitute someone else for Joe Biden without these charges being proven, that's it. That's a way for us to lose for sure.
You know what?
Because
I agree.
Would set this party on. Fire.
That's why I think
on
Joe Biden
fire.
Needs to pull out on his own accord and say, let's.
But I don't think he will. If,
of course
it's not.
Not.
Proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. And if he said, she said, she said it and he denied it.
Yep.
Her story did evolve from him inappropriately or making her feel uncomfortable the way he touched her to this other thing.
Yeah.
And I'm having a problem with that.
Okay, but then so like have an investigation.
Some of us will not make it through four more years.
No,
of Donald Trump.
I won't.
We cannot set this party on fire. Because if that happens and they try to replace him, Cuomo, Brown, which I love, there's going to be a problem. We are not going to win.
You know what? There's a problem regardless. There's a problem.
There's a problem regardless. We have someone in the office that is just all kinds of awful.
Horrible.
And there's someone else who we know won't have kids.
Horrible.
Cases.
Yes. So we're screwed either
but
way.
We're in a quite a position. But I really like. I want you to keep. Obviously, you're going to keep expressing yourself. But I just feel like the people who are really, really going hard on this. it's just, I just, the party's just splitting.
Right. And look, and this is why I wanted to talk about it today and why I wanted to open up the phones, because look, this is my opinion and you have your opinion and the next guy has his opinion. And I've been, you know, I've been on the incoming today because of what I said yesterday. Look, nobody knows.
I'm going to go after you hard. Right. You know what? Calm down.
Right. But, you know, look, and I said, with all this, if the election were today, I'd still vote for Joe Biden. But my point is, it's not a done deal yet. He is not the nominee. He may be the presumptive nominee, but he doesn't have 1,991 delegates yet.
Everyone has suspended their campaigns.
Yeah, but...
And I think that Bernie did vet this. And I think that he feels that it's not credible. And that's why he gave him... Because I don't think he would have given him... He would have dropped out, number one, if he knew this bombshell was there and he believed it. He wouldn't have dropped
out. This monster
out.
Was there. This monster was there before Bernie dropped out. She did the interview with Katie
Barack
Halper
Obama?
On March. Forget Barack Obama. Barack Obama did not want Joe Biden to run.
I'm talking about the vetting. The vetting.
I don't know.
He would not have taken him because his chances were so shaky anyway of winning that he would not have taken a problem on.
All right. I got you. Thank you for
that.
Thank you for the comments. All right. You guys, I did have an interview to get to, but, you know, we'll see. Maybe we'll run a little long today. Hi, who's this?
Hi, Nicole. This is Tripp. How you doing? Honey?
Hey, Tripp. So this is our friend. This is Tripp from the chat room. And I know you're a Biden fan.
Oh, yeah. No, hardcore Biden supporter. But I didn't call about that substantively today. I called to say, you know, anyone who listens to your show because you have strong opinions and then wants to threaten or leverage their support for a great radio show because they disagree with the opinion, get fuck off. All of y'all.
But tell us what you really feel, Tripp.
That me and you don't necessarily see eye to eye on every issue, but I listen to you because they're thoughtful, insightful, well-presented, and you speak truth to power.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know, just keep doing what you do, and if a moron out there doesn't appreciate it, then, you know, you don't need them. More of us will be rallying around you because we need to hear things, whether we agree with them or not. We're not sycophants on the left. We're not sycophants in the center.
Nope.
But if someone wants that, they can get it somewhere else. Keep doing what you do. Love you, Nicole.
Thank you so much, Tripp. It's always good to hear from you. I really appreciate it. All right. That's our friend Tripp, another South Florida colleague. No, shut-in. Another South Florida shut-in. All right. So we heard from a number of people, for the most part, we agree. Biden is a flawed candidate. We wish we had someone else. As of now, he's the guy, and if he's the guy, we need to bite the bullet and vote for him to get Donald Trump the hell out of there. And then we turn our energies on Joe Biden to make sure he does the right thing and hold him accountable. It starts with picking the right running mate, but here's the problem. He names Chris Dodd to head up the committee to find a running mate. Are you kidding? And he's already consulting Larry Summers? No. These are issues above and beyond. That all that? I'd still vote for him over Donald Trump. All right. So the show's going to run a little long today because I am going to move on to our next subject because there is a great film that's opening today nationally, virtually. It's a virtual film festival. So you can get that, this film called The Infiltrators, anywhere. Oh, all right. David, my husband is calling. We'll get back to that. Hold that thought. Hi, David.
Hi, this is Kitchen.
This is Kitchen?
This is David calling
from the kitchen. Hi. Okay.
My comment will be comforting and discomforting.
I can imagine. Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So here's my comment. I guarantee you there will be an investigation.
Okay.
That's the good news.
Yeah.
The bad news, it's already been done by the Trump campaign.
Really? Yeah.
And for the people who say, don't talk about this, because the Republicans are going to make an issue out of it, that is the ultimate fallacy and idiocy, because they're already going to talk about it. And I'll tell you exactly how it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Pinkel himself is not going to stand up there and say, what about Joe Biden?
No.
But his surrogates will.
Mm-hmm.
His surrogates will. And every time someone brings it up to him, he will deflect deny and say, what about Joe Biden?
Mm-hmm.
But this investigation has already been done, and it's been done by them. So who would you rather have do it? Somebody that might be in any way, shape, or form at least somewhat neutral, unbiased? Or would you rather hear the spin that the Republicans are going to put on it? Because they are going to.
So who is
There's
neutral?
No stopping that train that already left the station.
Right. So who's the neutral, unbiased party?
Well, then the way to figure that out is to choose it. Uh-huh. To have people from Biden's campaign sit down and say, okay, we pick this person, and this person, and then have people from whatever side, if you want to call it a side,
mm-hmm.
somebody from the other side, from Tara Reid's side, if you will, mm-hmm. say, okay, we pick this person, and this person. And if those people don't agree with each other, then fine. Let them agree on a third party and mm-hmm. let those people do the investigation. And if Joe Biden doesn't have anything to hide in those Delaware records, then, you know, he should have no problem saying, do a name search just like you and I can do in Microsoft Word. Go to find and put in the name Tara Reid and see
yep.
what comes up.
Yep. I hear you. All right. You're making good points, David. I, you know, can't argue with you. I try, but I won't on this point.
I love you, Madeline.
I love you, too. See you later. Bye. Bye. All right. So, yes, that was my husband, David. And, yes, he's a smart man. He makes sense. You know, but nobody's asking us. All right. So here's the deal. I told you we have this interview coming up. Luckily, I taped it earlier today, so I am not, you know, pushing this director off. But I saw this movie earlier in the week. I got a screener. It's opening tonight nationally in this virtual film festival. You can find out all the information about it at infiltratorsfilm.com, I believe. I will post all the information on my blog at NicoleSandler.com with on today's show. So it will be NicoleSandler.com/5-1-20. And if you're listening on the Progressive Voices Network, you're going to get a very abbreviated portion of this interview because we're just going to run out of time in about 10 minutes. So you can come to NicoleSandler.com/5-1-20 and listen to the full podcast because the whole interview will be on there. Okay. But I will have to, you know, cut it at an hour. For Progressive Noises. Everyone else, or Progressive Voices, everyone else will get the whole thing. So let me tell you about this film, The Infiltrators, and introduce you to its director. And we'll do that just like this. Whoops. And of course, wait a minute. No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You can't take me anywhere.
Still ungrateful to
sorry about that. Of course, I hit Lauren Mayer. I hit the wrong video. That was not the interview. This is the interview with Alex Rivera. All right, let's try that again. Joining me on the line right now is Alex. He's the co-writer and co-director of a new film called The Infiltrators, which actually was supposed to open down here in South Florida March 20th. But, you know, then we got hit by this virus. So today is the day, May 1st, that The Infiltrators will open nationally as a nationwide virtual cinema release. I guess you do what's necessary based on the times we're living in, huh, Alex?
I guess so. Everything is all life is digital now.
Yes. Wow. Everything has changed in the last 2 months or so. But this film, The Infiltrators, is actually, as things go in the film industry, you make it and it doesn't come out immediately. In fact, you had this film, The Infiltrators, ready for release last year, where it debuted at Sundance, the 2019 Sundance Film Festival, won the Next Audience Award and the Innovator Award. And I got to watch it last week, and I got to tell you, it blew my mind. Now, I live in Broward County, Florida. I'm in a suburb of Fort Lauderdale, and this is sort of the epicenter of where this film was based. It is a true story, and this is, I see why you won an Innovator Award, because this, you make do of with you use documentary film footage, and you mix it in with dramatizations. Can you tell us about the film? What is the story that you're telling?
Sure. That's a great place to start, because all the sort of cinema language mm-hmm. of the film, you know, comes out of the necessities of the story.
Sure.
So The Infiltrators tells a true story of a group of undocumented youth, folks that are sometimes called dreamers mm-hmm. in the media. So young undocumented immigrants who've become activists. And what they want to do is they want to stop deportations. This occurred under the Obama administration, and the group was trying to stop the deportations. Oh my gosh, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Stop deportations of themselves and their families. And they've been doing this kind of work for a few years. And so our film picks up when they've got this sense of, we know how to stop a deportation. And the group is young and brave, and they say, well, the best place to stop deportations, logically, is inside of a detention center where you've got hundreds of immigrants facing deportation. And so the Infiltrators is the story of how this group of undocumented immigrant youth decided to get themselves detained by the Border Patrol on purpose and go into a detention center to help get people out. And the detention center where they went in, the one that they targeted, was in Broward County, Florida, mm-hmm. the Broward Transitional Center, the Broward Detention Center. That's the detention center where they went in. The facility is filled with hundreds of non-criminal immigrants. They went in there to get those people out.
Right. Now, the film opens with a dramatized scene of a man who we've come to know. His name is Claudio?
Marco?
Claudio. Being arrested. He's taking the trash out of his house, and two vans pull up, and they throw him into the van, and his son sees him, his father, being taken away. That obviously was dramatized because you didn't have cameras there when Claudio was arrested by ICE. So explain how you mixed and matched footage. So his son, Claudio's son, reached out, found this group, the National Immigrant Youth Alliance, and said, they took my father. Can you help? Do I have that right?
Exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And basically, once the film gets going, the way that the documentary and the fiction elements work are that basically outside of the detention center, there's a support team mm-hmm. of activists that are working to contact politicians, to contact family members of detainees. And so there's a team outside at a safe house in Broward County. And we were there with them with our documentary camera mm-hmm. in real time, following them as they were working these cases, trying to get people free. And so that part is a documentary. But then inside the detention center where Claudio was, where the Infiltrators go, we as filmmakers could not go.
Sure.
And so that aspect of the story we've recreated with actors. But what's kind of weird and interesting about this form is that then the actors inside of the detention center space pick up the telephone and call the documentary on the outside. And so the two forms, the documentary and the scripted form, they run simultaneously in story time, and they talk to each other, and they move forward to tell this true story. So I think that's something that, like, cinematically we haven't seen before.
Right.
And it was really, really fun to do in terms of the cinema of it. That was exciting.
And it works really well as a viewer, knowing that, okay, we're being introduced to a lot of people here. I hate to call them characters. These are real human beings that you're telling their story of something horrible that's happened to them at the hands of our government. And you make it as easy for the viewer to follow along. You have the actors, for instance, you mentioned Marco. Marco, we meet as the actor portraying Marco goes up to this, I guess, a detention facility down here in South Florida, and basically gets himself arrested by playing dumb and acting like he didn't know any better than to tell the person there he was checking on his cousin or somebody, and he's here illegally too. They immediately detain him. That was a ploy to get him inside to find Claudio about who they had learned from his son, and to uncover what's going on. And then this movie, the Infiltrators, unfolds sort of like a thriller, because we learn that If you are inside trying to help other prisoners get information on contacting an attorney or somebody, that you're not allowed to do that, and that could get you thrown into isolation, right?
That's right. Yeah, and all of that was based on the interviews and other types of research that we conducted. And so, yeah, absolutely. Once the infiltrators go in, and again, they're young activists and have a lot of bravery and also a really smart analysis of the system, but they're doing something no one's ever done before. Mm-hmm. And so when the infiltrator Marco goes in, he learns, number one, not all the detainees want your help.
Right.
And some of the detainees are going to rat you out if they learn what you're doing. So you have to be careful who you're talking to. And number two, that, you know, this detention center in Broward County, Florida, it's pink. It's painted pink. It looks very innocent.
Right.
But they have a way to put people in solitary. They have punitive measures there. So, you know, so our character finds himself in over his head. You know, there's it's not all going to be, this is not going to be easy.
Right. Now, this is an actual person, Marco Saavedra, who was a volunteer, one of the activists, one of the dreamers working with the National Immigrant Youth Alliance to try to help others who've been detained, with the goal, you know, eventually to be deported. But he went in there really without a plan, just to help these other people. Did he realize that? I mean, this is real life. Yes, he could be deported too. And I want to ask you about his status, because on the release notes after the film was made in November of 2019, Marco apparently had his asylum hearing regarding his deportation to Mexico, and a decision was supposed to be handed down in January. Well, it's now May 1st. Do we know what happened with Marco?
Yeah. So that's a lot. So Marco, I mean, the group, when they took this risk, it was, again, under the Obama administration, and it was in a very strange kind of time period regarding immigration, because under Obama, people might remember, there were record levels of deportation.
Mm-hmm.
Under that administration, they hit 400,000 deportations in 1 year, which is like 1,200 deportations a day, almost one a minute. It's an extraordinary record, and even the Trump administration has not matched that. However, if an immigrant could get on TV and could make noise and could tell the story of their mother or their father who was unjustly being deported, that administration could be shamed. And then often people who got on TV would get released. And so the activists had this plan, like, we'll get in there secretly. We're going to help all these other people inside this detention center. And then when we're ready, we'll get on TV and get people out. I don't want to spoil the film,
right,
and say whether the plan worked or not, but that, mm-hmm, was the analysis. So they had a plan, but they were taking big risks. You know, Marco, since then, you know, he has an asylum application. It's kind of a long story and legally exactly why. The review is still pending, and we're not sure why it's been taking so long.
And some of the other people who we come to know throughout the film, I won't give it away, but we learn about their fate, and it's not always good. We do see some successes and jubilation from this group of young dreamers, young activists, but there's also moments of just sheer disbelief, number one, that this is our country doing this to people, and number two, that this is still going on. And then Alex Rivera, who the director of the film, who's our guest right now, you mentioned the deportation. This all happened under Barack Obama. Now, here we've been living with the horrendous programs and actions of the Trump administration, but it bears repeating that the entirety of this film was shot, the story was from before Trump took office. This was during the Obama administration. And as you rightfully point out, I mean, Obama earned the nickname Deporter-in-Chief. Things were not great. Now, granted, we didn't see that administration putting children, separating children from their parents and putting them in cages, or did we?
Well, under Obama, there was the practice of family detention, where young children were incarcerated in facilities like the Berks Detention Center in rural Pennsylvania. But they were generally kept with their parents. So you did have the phenomena of kids in these detention centers deprived of their freedom, but at least they were deprived of their freedom with their mothers or fathers. So yes, there's orders of magnitude and sort of cruelty that differentiate in some ways the two administrations, but it's not as simple as Obama was good to immigrants and Trump is bad.
No.
And the story of the infiltrators really points that out, because we see the vast scale of the deportation apparatus that Obama was running, and the fact, it's a simple fact, that his administration was detaining just everyday people, people who haven't hurt anyone, people who nobody called the police on them. They're just working and trying to make do and trying to become Americans. And so that's the story of Claudio Rojas. He was a landscaper from Argentina. He's a grandfather. He was been working for 20 years in South Florida, taking care of people's palm trees and lawns. And the Obama administration tried to deport him. And if it weren't for the efforts of the infiltrators, you know, they would have succeeded. So it just shows that this history is complicated, and that the people who can lead us to a better place in terms of immigration are the people whose families have suffered. You know, that we need to have some space in this country to listen to undocumented leaders like the infiltrators.
Right. Now, is this group still operating here in Broward County, the National Immigrant Youth Alliance? Are they still working with prisoners being held in these detention centers? Because that's still happening. And if anything, the situation is worse right now, because these people are trapped when there's this killer virus pandemic happening, and they have no way out.
No, so I guess a couple of things. One, in terms of the National Immigrant Youth Alliance, you know, they sometimes come together and separate and come together again. And right now they're in a phase, as far as I understand it, where they're kind of all working on different things. So the activists have gone sort of back to their home states, Marcos in New York, Vidi in North Carolina. They're all doing activism on their own. But to your point about coronavirus and detention, I mean, one of the things that the film points out, the reason that the Dreamers thought they could go in secretly to detention and then get on TV and get out is because these are not jails. People aren't sentenced. They don't have a trial. The entire detention apparatus is run on what's called discretion, which means that the federal government can kind of use its discretion. They can make a decision to detain you today. We're going to keep you for 2 weeks. You know what? We ran out of space. We'll let you go. Or we'll keep you for 2 years because we like making money off of the detention center lobbies like to make money off of this, because this whole thing is for profit. So we'll keep you for 2 years. And it's all willy-nilly and run on the whims of the government. And that's a really terrifying aspect of it. But today, during coronavirus, what that means is that they could empty out these facilities. Mm-hmm. The Broward County Detention Center, those hundreds of people kept in there, are just kept because the government sort of feels like it. They don't have sentences. They haven't committed crimes. They don't have to be there. They're there on the discretion of the Attorney General and ICE. And tomorrow they could be let out. And so there's a movement pressuring the government to say, balance this out. People are in there trapped, six people to a room.
Ooh.
During coronavirus, let them out. Why are they there? You know, they can come and face court or face immigration, their immigration hearing later, but they don't need to be sleeping inside that building every night. Let them out.
Right. And as you point out, you know, these are people, they've not been convicted of anything. They're being held in detention, but they're not convicted criminals who are serving a sentence. They haven't been sentenced. These are people who are just awaiting their fate at the hands of the U.S. government, whether or not they're going to be allowed to remain here or be deported. And again, there's nothing mandating that these people stay in these close quarters, especially at a time when that could be a death sentence. And yet, do we know what the capacity is, what the occupancy is at least this detention center here in Broward?
Well, the detention center in Broward holds about 700 people, typically around 600 men and 100 women. I don't have current numbers in terms of what the occupancy is right now, but that's the overall situation. And as depicted in the film, we understand that there's, you know, six people in each room. Also, just in case people are curious, you know, the federal government pays the GEO group, which runs that center, about $170 a night per detainee. So each of these little rooms, like the size of a hotel room, earns the GEO group like $1,100, $1,200 bucks a night, which is, you know, more than what you would pay to stay at the Waldorf Astoria in Manhattan. You know, so our tax dollars are paying this corporation almost $1,200 a night for a room. And so this is a big business. It's a billion-dollar corporation, publicly traded, that creates a political impetus to detain people. So there's a very, the film doesn't go deeply into this. The film is a sort of a thriller with a heist. It's meant to, it's a character-centered story, but there's a big piece of this puzzle, which is about the sort of for-profit nature of these detention centers.
Right. And wondering, like, who has jurisdiction? It's not a legal authority. This is a for-profit private prison, basically. And there seems to be a real gray area as to who has authority, law enforcement. The prisoners, we mentioned briefly that when Marco went in, he had to be very discreet, very secretive about passing out the phone number to the National Immigrant Youth Alliance so people could reach out and try to get help. In fact, when a member of the community came in, he's not a lawyer, but somebody trying to help these people, he was not allowed to give the forms that the prisoners needed in order to get help from a member of Congress, which is a privacy waiver. Everything was done to prevent anyone from helping the people who were stuck inside. That's not how the American legal system is supposed to work. If you are a prisoner awaiting court on a criminal case, you have the right to speak to an attorney or whomever is going to bring you information. That's not the case here. It seems like there's no rule of law. There's no jurisdiction or rights here.
Yeah, there's no due process. In the case of and we all have basic things that we kind of grow up knowing about, like when you get arrested, you get your Miranda rights, you get the right to a phone call, you get a state-appointed attorney if you can't afford one. And these are like technicalities, but they're also what make a system moral and decent. They're the guardrails. And none of those guardrails exist on the immigration system. When people are detained by ICE, they're not read their rights. They're not given the right to an attorney. All of these basic things are not provided to immigrants. They're just kind of warehoused in these facilities, again, at the discretion of the government. They can kind of keep them as long as they want or as shortly as they want. It's ultimately, they're being detained to await a hearing in front of an immigration judge, but there's a backlog of, in some cases, 6 years, 8 years to get those kinds of hearings. And so it's a totally, from the point of view of someone who's living through this, it's a terrifying system. Horrible. Because you have really the most vulnerable members of society thrown into this kind of gulag without, in many cases, without an attorney, you know, and so families are left to try to figure out this incredibly complex system. In some cases, children are detained without attorneys, and they're left to figure out. You know, so it's a really, you know, in our country, the political conversation is often like, "What part of illegal don't you understand? They're illegals. Deport them." You know, but when you actually start to look at a case and understand what happened to one person, for, you know, in our case, in our film, it starts with Claudio, you realize how actually complicated this is. And how unfair it is to people who are trying to do the right thing.
So Alex Rivera is the director. You're the director of the film, The Infiltrators. Again, it opens nationally tonight, May 1st, via a virtual film festival. In fact, if you go to the infiltrators.oscilloscope.net, which is the official studio website, they have a list of the theaters, but it's all virtual. So you buy a ticket and then you can stream it in the privacy of your own home. Now the film should be available on the streaming movie channels or some pay services next month. But this is the opening, again, postponed from March. What brought you to this project, Alex? How did you get involved with this film?
Yeah, sure. So my co-director and I, Christina Ivarra is my co-director. Mm-hmm. She and I, we both come from immigrant families, and we've always been making movies now for about 20 years about immigration and border issues. And when we saw the National Immigrant Youth Alliance in the news back in 2010, we thought what they were doing was incredible. We were sort of shocked and frightened, but wanted to understand what they were doing. And inspired, we were inspired. And so we reached out to them and started to make a film. And we thought it would be a short film, and then ended up filming with the group off and on for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And that's how we ended up with them in Broward County when they went there to try to get Claudio out of detention.
It's an incredible story. And as I said, when I began watching it, I didn't know what I thought I was going to get, kind of a documentary about a detention center here in Broward County, which was what drew me to it, you know, initially, because I live here. By the way, we never hear about this facility ever. Didn't even know it was here until I saw your film. And again, it drew me in like the thriller that it is, and the horrific story that it tells about, you know, how Americans, how our society treats others, treats immigrants. And the really sad part is it's easy to blame everything on Trump and look on in horror as to what his administration continues doing to this day. But this all unfolded during the Obama administration. And still, we have dreamers out there who are wondering what their future is going to be, wondering if the promises made by the Obama administration that were never codified are going to be taken away from them, if they're going to be deported. I mean, they're living under a very precarious situation right now.
That's right. That's right. It might come down today or tomorrow or the next few days, but there's a pending Supreme Court decision around DACA. And then obviously the election in the fall, which is going to really determine, I think, the future of the country in terms of what dreamers face and what hope there might be for immigrants to fight for themselves. But the film, you know, it touches on all these political topics, but it's really meant to be a great story. And we think it is a great story. And it's both, as you've mentioned, it's horrifying, and those kinds of searing realities depicted, but there's also, we hope, a lot of inspiration.
Oh, yeah.
We were inspired by the infiltrators themselves and watching them fight. And so we really think that's an important thing to put out in the world right now.
Without a doubt. There are some very, very courageous young people, and thankfully we get to see them, the actual real activists who are risking everything to help other people who've been thrown in these detention centers. And so we see them both portrayed, some of them, by actors, and we see the real people who are still working so hard to make a difference. It's a wonderful film. I encourage everyone to see it. And while we're all shut in, this is an easy way to do it. It's called The Infiltrators. You can find out more at infiltratorsfilm.com. I'll post links to all the places where you can get tickets and watch it and find out more information about it on my blog at NicoleSandler.com. After the show. Alex Rivera, thank you so much. Again, congratulations. I'm sorry that, you know, obviously times dictated that your big opening on March 20th was delayed. Hopefully it'll get more exposure this way because people are stuck at home. Maybe they'll all tune in or stream it tonight. Yeah. But congratulations on the finally, the film opening, such as it is.
We really appreciate that. Thanks for taking the time, and invite everybody to connect with the film at infiltratorsfilm.com. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, Alex. Good luck with it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And with that, we've reached the end of another program. The film really is great. You can go to infiltratorsfilm.com, and there are links where you can buy the download. You don't have to go through the whole virtual movie theater thing either. And it just underscores what a, you know, fucked up system we live under. And in this case, it was during Obama's term. This didn't even, wasn't even happening during, well, I mean, it's been happening during Trump. This just didn't take place during Trump's term. All right, I'm done. Thank you for listening, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend. Stay safe. I will be here Monday, and it looks like on Monday, a special edition of the show, we will be joined by the President of the United States. I'm not kidding. I will get to interview Donald Trump on Monday. So be here. I'll see you then. Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay safe. Bye.